The following programming is sponsored by Clean and Sober Media. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
If you need immediate help, please call the National Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP. Welcome to Clean and Sober Radio, brought to you in part by Jefferson University Hospitals and Thomas Jefferson University, providing excellent clinical and compassionate care in the Philadelphia region, a proven leader in healthcare and education since 1825. And now, here are your hosts, Gary Hendler and Mark Sigmund.
Hey, hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to the show. Clean and Sober Radio features real people with real stories about addiction to drugs and alcohol. Mark Sigmund, what's new this week in recovery news?
So remember we were talking about a fentanyl vaccine some time back? A new fentanyl vaccine created by a company called Ovox in Texas is heading for clinical trials in the middle of next year with hope of being a groundbreaking solution to the opioid crisis. The drug has shown success in animal studies and stops fentanyl from crossing the blood-brain barrier and causing overdose. Testing on a new vaccine can take 5 to 10 years, so it's a ways down the road. The drug would train the immune system to make antibodies to attack the particles of fentanyl. It's pretty fascinating. They actually would combine bacteria with the fentanyl isotopes or whatever they are, and it would train the immune system to actually stop it from being effective.
So you said it's going to be 5 to 10 years. You see, that's the ridiculousness of it.
Yeah.
When COVID hit, when the government actually wanted to do something, they got it done. So, all right, what else you got?
Yeah, so it's going to be a little while.
Yeah.
So the founding documents of Alcoholics Anonymous, known as the Big Book, have sold for $2.4 million to billionaire and Indianapolis Colts owner Jim Irsay. Irsay said he plans to build a special display for it and display it in the Alcoholics Anonymous headquarters in New York several months a year and considers himself a steward of the manuscripts. He considered, you know, he's in recovery for over 25 years, and he ended up, you know, buying this, and there's notes from Bill W. written in on this manuscript of the Big Book. Fascinating stuff. He also wants to send it across the country so people can see it.
Very nice.
Yeah, and he says the only way to stay sober is to give it away. So pretty cool stuff, Gary.
Right. And, you know, giving away, we both give away all the time, and our guest gives away. And so that is the icing on the cake. All right, when we come back, our guest, John Alight, enforcer for the Gambino crime family, to a strong voice against the use of any illegal drugs, especially fentanyl. John is certainly giving back to our community, and he is here right now in the studio. So when we come back, you're going to have an incredible opportunity if you call in to have a conversation with John. So don't go away, and we'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
When you look into the mirror, is your addiction staring back at you? Too many times, that answer is yes. At Gaudenzia, we see you differently. We see you as a whole person, healthy and at peace, living beyond the stranglehold of drugs or alcohol. At Gaudenzia, we see a pathway with tools you can use to lead you to recovering the life you want to live, recovering the life you want to share with the family who loves you. At Gaudenzia, we see hope and believe with the effective treatment we can offer designed uniquely for you within reach of where you are standing, you'll look into the mirror and see the potential for the fulfilling life that is in you. This time, you'll find your hope at Gaudenzia. It's spelled G-A-U-D-E-N-Z-I-A. Call 833-976-4357. Again, it's 833-976-4357. Begin to recover your life through treatment at Gaudenzia today. Begin today.
What's happening? Brandon Novak here from Those Movies Jack's, or author of that addiction memoir, Dream Seller. Do me a favor and tune into Clean and Sober Radio with Gary Hendler.
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
You can always enjoy this show, Clean and Sober Radio, on WWDB in Philadelphia, 97.5 FM High Def 2 in Philadelphia, WGAC in Augusta, Georgia, and WNBR in Tampa, Florida. Welcome to the show. And John A. Light, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us, man.
Thanks for having me back.
It's a real pleasure. I'm going to try to break this in. Your life is so incredible. It's so almost contradictory, because your first half of your life, you were involved in a lot of bad stuff, and now you are involved in a whole lot of great stuff. So let's start. You were born in Queens, New York.
Correct.
And your parents are both immigrants?
Yeah.
From Albania?
From Albania, yeah.
And for our listeners, can you tell everybody where Albania is?
Yeah. Albania is in the middle. It's one of the Balkan countries. It's in the middle of Greece. Corfu is about 40 minutes away.
Right.
And Bari, Italy's a couple hours away across the sea, the Mediterranean.
Right.
And so it's in that region with Macedonia, Montenegro, Albania, Romania, you know, so you got the Balkan countries there.
How far was that from Atlantic City, New Jersey?
I do the drive all the time.
You do the drive all the time. So just for these purposes, you know, as you got older, we will regress back. You were obviously in the Cosa Nostra, the mafia, but you couldn't become a made man because your family, your parents, your grandparents were not 100% Italian.
Correct. I didn't have lineage to an Italian background. I was an Albanian that was raised in a typical Albanian family and proud Albanian. You know, we were very proud of our heritage.
So for the purpose of the Cosa Nostra, were you sort of looked at as a second-class citizen in that organization because you weren't 100% Italian? Was there a pecking order?
Yeah, you know, you're always kind of trying to prove yourself. You know, like any business, you know, father and son, or you're in any industry, you move up the ladder because of who you know. You know, it's not always by merit. And one of the things I still talk about is, you know, I'm from the inner city. I got a lot of inner city friends. And we talk about, you know, privileged guys. You know, people are lucky, are born with a spoon, and others aren't. And, you know, when I tell them, that doesn't mean that you can't succeed. It means you have to have the confidence to be able to succeed.
And would you agree with this? There is succession, even in illegal terms, with, you know, you can become successful in an illegal world. It doesn't have to be legit.
I do a lot of guest speaking, yeah, lectures and things, and motivational speaking. And, you know, in any industry, I don't care what the industry is, you got to work your way up.
Yeah,
you
right.
Just, you know, you don't just step into something. You got to sacrifice. Unfortunately for me, I sacrificed my life. And by doing so, you get shot, you get stabbed, you get batted. And you spent, you know, decades in jail. That's part of that life.
How many people did you kill?
You know, people ask that question.
I love it.
I always say the same thing. You know, you're not out there counting how many people you killed. I mean, it was, unfortunately, I'm smiling about it. It's nothing to smile about.
I know
about.
That. I know.
It's, you know, I make light of it to get, you know, to actually deal with it, I guess. And but it's an industry, you know, obviously, you know, it's like going to war. People don't count what they're doing daily, but... You know, a lot of guys.
So
it's the best way.
The first person that you killed was not actually in the mafia, in that hole. It was before that?
Yeah, it was before that. People don't talk about that too often with me. The first guy I killed, it wasn't by a gun. And it was me protecting one of my childhood friends, regular guy. He was in a neighborhood bar called Old Brother Inn.
Yeah.
And three bikers from a rogue biker gang. And they were from the other side of where we live, on the other side of Myrtle Avenue. And they got into an argument with a friend of mine. They came back with a bunch of guys and had them in the bar and said they were going to kill him, hurt him. And he called me up on a payphone to my house.
Payphone, way back.
Cell phones, yeah. And I only lived about five blocks and happened to be one of my drug spots. And I jumped in the car, brought a bat, didn't bring a gun, for whatever reason at that time. I was a young, wild kid.
Yeah.
And I came out, and the guys, I approached the guys, and my friends came out. There was two guys, the guy Joey and Kenny. Joey has passed away since in a car accident. Kenny's still around. And I knew the bartender well, Kathy, and I knew the owner of the bar was an ex-cop buddy. And when I showed up, I guess they didn't know how aggressive I was going to be, and I end up killing the first guy, who was the guy that was instigating the problem with my friend. He was in a coma for months, and then eventually he passed.
What'd you kill him with?
Baseball bat.
So, okay, what does it feel like to kill somebody with a baseball bat? Does it mean anything?
I baseball batted four guys that day, those three guys, and I baseball batted my friend Kenny by accident. And I don't know, it was a detachment. The way I used to be back then, it was, you know, it didn't mean anything to me, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I was protecting my friends, and I was trying to hurt them. I wasn't basically trying to kill them, but, you know, a young guy, you don't realize you're batting a guy across the head, you know, 10, 15 times, you know, you're going to kill him.
Yeah. I just want to reiterate to our audience, you know, we've all done some bad stuff. The real accomplishment is when you change your life and you do such great things. And that's what this guy has done in front of us, Mark. Let's go back to your father. I found reading your book, actually, Darkest Hour, this book, and everybody, you really need to get this book. Can you get on Amazon?
Yeah, it's available.
This is a great, incredibly interesting book about basically a bad guy who is a great guy now, right?
I think I started off like any kid. I was an innocent young kid that was exposed to a life of crime, a life from organized crime.
But your dad had an influence on you. Like, you know, you'd have card games and you'd stand behind people and give your dad signals to cheat. And you had relatives, uncles and stuff who were involved in shady stuff. And you told me a story before we came on the air that you were signaling to your father somebody's cards. And you gave the wrong signal, and your father lost a lot of money.
Oh, man.
So that ride home must have been hell for you. I'm
sure. He was screaming at me. But, you know, it's great. You know, people don't realize my father was a gambler.
Yeah.
He wasn't a gangster. He knew all the gangsters. He hung out with everybody. Yeah. And he exposed me to what he knew, not realizing what he was doing. I love my father. He's still alive. He's in a nursing home. He had some major strokes, and we're very close my whole life. So he taught me what he knew best, and he's coming from Albania with no money. Mm-hmm. You know, typical Albanians were, you know, gamblers, smokers, you know, running in the streets, and, you know, they came from a communist country. You know, my grandfather did, my father did. And it was a struggle, and he didn't go to school. He dropped out of school in the third grade, and that was his life lessons to me.
Yeah, he had to survive, right?
He had to survive, and, you know, and at the time, he was only concerned in two things. It was sports and gambling. And he taught me those things that he knew best. He was an educated guy at that time. He started reading books, actually, when he got older. He was pretty, on his behalf, not because he's my dad, he gave me some good, sound advice over the years that I didn't take. And I took the stuff that I wanted to take. He never wanted me to be a violent guy. He used to try everything, beating me up and chasing me out of the house. And then he didn't want me to get killed in the street, so he'd take me back in. And, you know, as a kid, you don't really see it. As a father now, you do see it.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, if you're just joining us now, everybody, we're talking to John Alight, and he was the enforcer for the Gambino family, did a lot of really scary stuff, paid the price for it. And now he's doing incredible stuff to give back. I love the fact that you were an incredible athlete also in high school, and you were given a scholarship to the University of Tampa.
Correct.
And you had an issue with your shoulder or something.
My elbow.
Your elbow. And your doctor said you needed surgery, and the coach said you just needed shots. And was that the wrong thing?
Well, I want to tell you, my coach was Coach Cavanaugh. He was a pitcher, I believe, for St. Louis. Sabin, who became the manager of San Francisco, when Coach Mulry, Pete Roth Mulry, was a coach from high school, originally Tampa Catholic. He won all kinds of championships. He was a great coach. So I'll never take nothing away from him. It was his opinion at that time that to take the shots. My doctor for the University of Tampa was actually a New York Mets physician. And he sat with me and he talked to me. And Pete at the time was like, if you don't take these shots, I'm going to kick you out of, you know, off the team. And he was like my father, so I really respected him. He says, I'm going to kick you off the team, and there goes your scholarship. You'll be going home. So, you know, my family didn't have the money, and yeah. He was, you know, a competitive guy, you know, Pete. And again, a great coach, but that's all he knew. He didn't mean to harm me. You
sure.
know, I'll never say nothing against him because yeah. he was a winner. He brought that school and University of Tampa, won some World Series of colleges, and he was a great coach. Just this is, you know, the problem is, you know, people, it's their opinion, and they're hardcore guys. They grew up hard, and they teach you hard. So I get it, you know. Sure. I just, you know, it happened to be the bad choice, the wrong choice for me.
So you were very upset or devastated after that whole thing went down. And is that when you turned to maybe boxing? Is that what you wanted
no,
to
No, I started boxing also at a young age. My father had us in the ring. I got pictures when we were 3 and 4 years old fighting. And, he just made sure that every day we ran, we did our push-ups, we threw a baseball around, we threw the rubber-coated hardball against the wall in the schoolyard and fielded ground balls. He'd take us to the park. So that's all we ever did. But when baseball went sour, yeah, I tried to go back into boxing. I had epilepsy. I was supposed to fight back at 10 years old in the Junior Olympics. I was going into the ring, and they wouldn't let me. They wouldn't approve me.
Do you think that the way that you grew up as a young boy, not violence, but, you know, it was a lot of boxing and all sorts of stuff. Do you think that is what precipitated you getting into crime and doing stuff? And also, I want to know how your parents dealt with you, because it seems like your father was a straight shooter, a tough guy. But how'd they deal with their son who was
beat me up all the time?
Beat you up all the time.
But listen, it was hard for them to deal with me. I don't think it was what he taught me per se. It was, you know, I talk a lot on my shows, you know, because I do shows which you know, podcasts.
Yes.
And I talk a lot about, you know, your zip code. Where you live is where you become if you stay on the streets like I did.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're following our neighborhood. Our neighbor is all gangsters. My little girlfriend, I've said it on many occasions, her uncle and father were made guys with the Lucchese family. I started running around for them as a kid. And my boxing coach, Itor, was also a bookmaker, and he was an ex-pro fighter. And he was one of my trainers at one time. And then I had this other guy, Nick, who was a World War II veteran, tough guy, no fingers. He got him blown off during the wars. And they're all gangsters. And my baseball coach, he was boss in our neighborhood. He was a captain of Gambino family. So, you know, these are the guys, the sons that were my coaches, Albert and these are the guys I hung around with. So I became what these guys were.
I mean, I totally get that.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, I mean, if that's your environment, you're not in the library all day, right?
I didn't really see anything wrong with it, you know. And, I did simple things like stealing parking meters. And one of my neighbors caught me down the block. It was on Jamaica Avenue where I'm from. And he was yelling at me, and he called me over, and I didn't run away. And I was like a little near him, like, you know, you're skittish, but you're not running. And he was not mad that I was stealing the parking meters. He was mad the way I was doing it. So he wanted to teach me how to do it. He says, don't worry, everybody wants you to take them. Because at that time it was 10 cents a meter.
Yeah, yeah.
So as we're taking them, all our neighbors are okay with it. And then we started to understand certain crimes are good, certain aren't. If you're going against the establishment, it was good to take the meter.
Well, when you say take the meter, did you saw the meter
that's
off?
That's what we were doing originally. We were shaking the meter out of the cement.
Yeah.
And trying to loosen the cement up.
Oh, my gosh.
And eventually we take one or two and run it off with it, and we get a butter knife and turn the head over and get the dimes that take you forever. And he told us, go get a pipe cutter.
Okay.
And then, so we started getting pipe cutters and taking the heads off of them. And then we learned how to open them up with a drill set. So we got an older kid to help us. And
so your crimes,
Kevin and Timmy, that's for you guys. They were good guys. they were part of my capers.
Bigger and bigger and bigger. And then was the big time when you got with the Gambinos and the Gottis? Was that like you hit the jackpot? Now I'm going to be really respected because I'm with these guys.
Yeah, I started staying around back in the, you know, as a child in the South Bronx, and I stayed with the Lucchese people. And I got involved with, you know, eventually with them collecting money as a kid. And then eventually they asked me to baseball bat somebody. It was the first time I baseball batted, but somebody collected money from.
Did you think that was wrong?
No. I thought the guy was, you know, I know we can't curse, a rotten guy.
Yeah.
Because, this, you know, back then there's levels where people understand. When you're gambling and you're getting paid week after week like this guy was, and then he finally lost, and back in those days, whatever he lost, say 500,
yeah,
was big money. He came up empty. So, of course, these guys are mad. We just paid you for 4 or 5 weeks, and now you lose. So what you're doing is basically robbing them with a pistol without the gun. So they told me, go see the guy and tell him he's got to pay. And then the guy was avoiding them. And then eventually I knock on his door with a bat behind my back. And I'm a kid. He doesn't expect it. And I just cracked the bat across his head. And, you know, he fell like halfway in his house. And I continued to bat him and told him, you better have that money.
So you actually, you were sort of like a baseball player in a way, right?
Well, you're comfortable with the bat because you use it. And it was very fast. You know,
yeah.
It was very quick as a kid. And believe, you know, in anything, sports, it's not really strength, it's speed strength.
Do you think, John, if you would have been successful in your baseball career, let's say nothing happened to your hand, do you think you would have still been attracted to a life of crime?
No, I mean, you know, logically you would say you might be still, you know, interested in it. You'd still like these guys. You'd probably hang around here and there, but, you know, you would take your path where it is. And eventually what happened now is you get older and you become successful the right way.
Yeah.
You start realizing, you know, these guys are good guys, but got a lot of faults in them.
Yeah.
You know, I talk about, when we're in Philly, I talk about Joey Molino a lot. You know, a lot of, see guys knocking them left and right, but I don't. I think that he was good at what he did. He's successful. You got a lot of jealous people. I mean, it ain't the greatest life. And, you know, and I think if he had a choice and could go back as a jockey, as a kid or something.
Yeah.
He would have stayed that route. But on the other hand, he was loyal to what he knew.
I also think that as we age, our brains change. And what was exciting and what was all this other stuff, it starts to change. And you start to maybe start to think, wait a minute, I'm lucky I'm still here. And now maybe I should be doing something else.
As a kid, you don't think
about
the consequences.
Right.
And you love the adrenaline. And, the, you know, people don't understand. It's not all about money. It was about the excitement.
Right.
You know, we'd run out, get dressed. We go to the corner. We, you know, you're slinging drugs. And, you know, we're meeting guys. We're fighting other guys from another neighborhood for no reason, basically. You know, you're robbing the airport. You're hijacking trucks. It's always excitement.
And that gave you respect from a certain kind of person.
I got to tell you, most of the adults, the legitimate people, respected you. So that really screws the way you're thinking, too, because
you
got adults that are successful businessmen kissing your butt because, you know, you're who you are or who they think you are, and they see you staying with all kinds of gangsters, and they see us getting out of, you know, I'm driving around with this, you know, this guy George Gatti at the time. He had a nice caddy, dressed real slick. He looked like an Omar Sharif guy, and, you know, they'd see me get out of his car to say, oh, this kid's with this guy.
It's like the Bronx Tale movie,
right? Yeah, it's like the Bronx Tale. You know, any of these movies are made from these stories.
Of course. Listen, if you're just listening to us on different mediums and you want to watch us do the show with John Alight, go to Facebook and go to our page, Clean and Sober Radio, and you can watch us right now do this show just like these folks. God, this is a big list. Laura Story, Suzanne Duncan, Todd Klotz. Todd Klotz says, another day, another meeting, and still clean. Mark Sigmund. Todd Klotz says, I stepped up, and I am chairing a new meeting. Good for you. Mike Brill is watching. Laura Story says, hello, guys. It's been a while since I've been in the background, but I'm back. Just to let everyone know, I can just... I don't know what it says here. Anyway, 15 years clean. Good for you. Rhonda Hope is watching. Mimi Dorshu is watching. Andrea Diaz.
My beautiful wife.
There you go. A lot of people. We'll get to everybody. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, we're going to continue this incredible discussion from this incredible guy, John Alight. We'll be back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
A cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you.
The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care. Backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF-NOW. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. The power to out-science cancer.
Hey everybody, this is Tommy James, and you're listening to Clean and Sober Radio, and so am I.
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
We're back. We are back. What a great story John Light has.
Amazing. You know,
in the extreme, it's like we can get better as long as we're alive. And we can change.
Yeah, it's redemption, right? I mean, all of us have our skeletons and all that stuff. And, you know, you get in recovery or you go out and you help people like John is. He's going into Kensington all the time, which, you know, nobody wants to go to Kensington, you know, and it's amazing stuff.
It is. And, you know, I think people are fascinated with jails, crime stories, and this is no different.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, John, you did so much crazy stuff. You killed so many people. I thought I was in troublemaker. I said, I got caught cheating on my law exams. I thought I was in trouble.
Yeah, I told these guys before the show, my story is like, it really does not seem that bad, right? But yeah, interesting stuff.
You had a lot valet parking business?
Yeah.
Very entrepreneurial in everything you've done.
The airport,
I mean, drug dealing, gambling, loan sharking. Is it hard for you? It's hard for me to picture myself doing the bad stuff I did. I know you can remember and you can see it. Is it hard to believe that you, this guy now, would do that stuff?
You know, when I stop and I think, or I'm doing these shows, or I'm talking to kids at events, you know, your DNA is your DNA, right? You know, somewhere in you is that same person. It's the way your ego's got to control it. You got to learn humility. You learn consequences. You learn what's important to you, your family, you know, what you're teaching. You know, you can talk, but talking's not good enough. You have to live it so that everybody that's watching me or I'm talking to these kids say that if he can do it, I can do it. And, you know, they'll respect you for your new life. And you're giving them the chance to believe that they can do that. So,
right.
You know, so I got a different adrenaline rush now. And, you know, I look back and I just don't believe, you know, it was me, but it was me. You know, and I know I have the ability to be that same person. I just avoid it now.
Right. It's sort of a control issue?
I learned how to control it. There's places I don't go because I don't want to run into people that, not out of fear, I don't want to run into them because
they start being like stupid with you?
And then I'm not sure how I'll
react,
and I don't put myself there. So I learned not to put myself in those positions so I don't be who I used to be.
So, you know, it's like the same thing. Like in the program, the you know, AA and NA, it's people, places, and things.
We
want to avoid that. And John's saying in his former life, it's people, places, and things.
Yeah. 100%. You have to be able to I want a better life. You know, I want a better life. I missed, you know, when these kids I'm talking to or anybody is addicted or anybody that lost their life, like my daughter or anybody that's been, you know, I tell everybody, which you just said, it's one day at a time. Don't worry about tomorrow. I missed all those years, 20 years when guys were going to the beach and dating young girls and going, I missed a lot of that. So, you know, now I want to live that. So what's important to me now is my family, the message to kids so they don't end up doing what I did. And then you don't fit in a lot of places because you missed a quarter century of your life and you're trying to catch it back up. So you don't fit in the same bracket of people, you know, and I don't feel that way either. I feel like, you know, I'm very energetic. And so, you know, I still want that excitement in my life. I just learned different ways to get it.
Do you find that there are people from your past, not the bad guys, but maybe neighbor, they don't want anything to do with you because of your past? I mean, I find it for myself, even with the addiction.
Well, you know, I run into people, guys, girls, you know, that you date or you know or you're friendly with,
yeah,
that if they know you for a while and then they find out about you, they're fine.
Right.
But if they just meet you, they're afraid. And, yeah, you know, I don't blame him. And even me, I'm embarrassed a lot of times. I don't want people to know about me right off the bat. But then you don't want to be a liar either. So, you know, it's a hard mix. You got to judge who you can tell right up front. And then not lie to them, but just don't bring it up until they know you.
How come a documentary or a movie hasn't been made about you? I mean, it sounds like a no-brainer.
Because, you know what? I think I've done so many documentaries, Netflix, all kinds of series overseas here that I'm involved in where I talk about crime, talk about, you know, they use me as an expert in different things. The newspapers use me, magazines use me as, yeah, you know, to do whatever stories they're doing, whether it's a legal case about, you know, Senator, you know, Menendez or whoever it is that they use. But I think that it gets, you know, oversight of not doing it and on my actual life. I mean, I had some people that approached me and asked me to do certain things, but not the right funding, so I deny it.
Right.
And I want it to be done right, and I want the right message at the same time. I don't want to glorify it, because you hear people tell me all the time, well, you glorify it. I'm not glorifying it. But people aren't going to listen to a message unless you give them 80% of the past and the story to interest them into listening, and then you can give them 20% of the message. You're not going to pass 80% of lecturing. People don't want to hear it. And 20% of the interesting, whether it's bad or not, it's interesting.
You know, at this point in your life, after going through all of this, do you have, like, regrets or feel guilty about the deaths? Like, I could imagine, it seems like you're doing so much good work now, and it's almost like amends.
Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, you know, without justifying it, you know, all the guys that were involved with me were gangsters. You know, they weren't regular people. You're not just going and bothering somebody who's regular. So in your own mind, you kind of justify it, even though you don't want to justify mm-hmm. it. And the other thing is, some of these guys, and I still believe it, that I killed, deserved it. And I hate to say that, I'm going to explain it, because I did a show, Crime Watch, in Denmark, and the mm-hmm. woman cut out the part where I said I killed him and I'd like to kill him again. There were guys that gang raped a girl. They beat her half to death. And, you know, they end up dead.
Yeah.
And some of them try to kill me. So it's not, you know, there's it's not simply, you know, there's gray areas. And it's just the life we lived. I can't take it back, and I'm not going to regret my whole life. I'll just use it as a lesson and try to teach kids not to do what I did. And,
right.
And don't let your ego get the best.
And you do a lot of trying to help young people, men and women, not to lead a life that you got sucked into, right? You're trying.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm all over the place as far as with kids and second chance programs and people that are addicted. And
yeah.
Because it's basically the same behavior, to be honest with you. The street brings you everything that's negative. If you're going to live in the street, it's going to bring you drugs. You're going to use it. You're going to sell it. You're going to drink. You're going to be all over the street. You'd end up getting out of control, and you become, you know, somebody that has an alcohol problem. And that's all because you're laying around with the wrong people and you're not using your time properly. And I say it about jail too. So when you talk about jail, there's a positive way of going to jail. Unfortunately, the guys that go to jail, you program up. That means get up in the morning, work out, get up and read the Bible, go to the gym, go to church, take classes, read, stay with people that are doing positive things. Or you can hang around jail all day, gamble, and I'll guarantee you eventually you're going to get yourself in problems, because guys aren't going to pay you or you're not going to pay. And when you start making moves in prison for drugs or everything else, eventually you're going to get hurt. So,
yeah. So August of 2022, your beautiful daughter, Chelsea, I say was murdered by a drug dealer, most likely.
She, so do I.
She took a legitimate medicine that was laced with fentanyl. How in the world did you deal with that, man?
Well, you know, I wanted to kill a guy, obviously. I went past, and I never talk about this, the police noticed, because they had surveillance, and they knew I was by the house several times. And this is when I changed my life, and I fought myself, kill him or not kill him. It's not going to bring my daughter back. But, you know, people say, and I hear this a lot too, because you got a lot of negative people. They try to get my goat. My daughter wasn't a killer. My daughter wasn't a drug dealer. My daughter wasn't a gangster. I was. So it's not karma, because it's about my life, not hers, and it's her life that she lost, and she didn't live my, and she wasn't in my shoes. But then they'll tell you, well, you were a drug dealer. Yeah, I was. And the difference of these guys that are putting fentanyl in is like putting arsenic. When you ask me for a glass of water and I give you water and I put arsenic, you didn't know what's there. She didn't ask for fentanyl.
Right.
So he killed her. If she asked for it, then I wouldn't be as angry or want some sort of justice. But also, I don't want to blame just one person that's out on the street selling this. You know, they're letting these borders wide open, and fentanyl's coming in like crazy.
Yeah.
And nothing's being done about it. You hear on the news all the time about gun deaths, and there's probably around, I think the high number is 24,000 a year, which is 10,000 of that is suicide, and only about 2% is from legal guns. It's all illegal guns. Border, again, it's open. And yet, fentanyl's killing over 100,000 in opioids a year. And they're not talking about it. It's 10 times the number, actually. But why isn't there such a big push for fentanyl and opioids in this country?
Good question.
You talk about guns.
Can you tell us a little bit about Chelsea? Can you tell us what kind of woman she was? And
well, she was a great mom when she had the baby.
Right.
I used to look at her and smile because, you know, like everybody, we all have our own demons and problems and depressions. And, you know, she's no different than anybody. But as a mom, she would make sure that her son didn't stay on the computer all day, which is something maybe I wouldn't have done. She did it. And she would say, no, you got to go out and play. You know, you can draw, because she used to paint. She used to paint with her. She loved animals. She liked to joke. I would joke all the time with her, and she would laugh like crazy. And, you know, she was close to me. And like any other daughter and father, you know, you have your differences, you fight. But, sure, you know, you love each other. You know, she was a good person to people. She was a good friend.
And she wasn't an addict. She used Percocet something to sleep sometimes, you know. Okay, it's legit.
I mean, like any other kid. Listen, yeah. I grew up with all kids. My whole neighbor was using drugs. They weren't drug addicts. They were all just recreational, whatever. She was depressed, she'd pop a perk.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to die from a perk. For people that don't know, you might get an addicted to perk, I guess. Or, you know, if you do too many, maybe she was doing too many. I would get on her for it. I knew she was doing it. I couldn't stop her. I wanted to stop her. But she took one perk. Whether she took two perks, you're not supposed to die. You know, so these kids are overdosing because they're smoking a little weed and there's fentanyl in it. They're doing a line of coke.
Sure.
They're not aware of it. They're doing a mescaline or ecstasy or actually fat-burning pills, and they're dying. And so this is murder.
This is murder.
I said, this is not somebody saying, hey, can I take, you know, can you give me fentanyl? So I'm one of these, you know, I'm a realist. I understand the world. I understand the street more than anybody. I grew up here. So am I mad at that guy? Yeah, I'm mad at him because he pressed these pills and he made fentanyl.
Was he prosecuted?
Yeah, he was prosecuted for something else with somebody else. Drug dealing, you know, in and out of jail. And, you know, maybe, I'm not saying greed, stupidity. I don't think he intentionally is trying to kill my daughter, but maybe so. But I didn't care about that. You killed my daughter. She didn't ask for that. Did I want to kill him? Yeah. Did I kill him? No. I'm a different person. If it was ever years ago, I wouldn't have thought about it. I would have just killed him.
I think that's really a testimony to your, I don't want to say the word maturity, but your change of how you process certain events.
Well, I process it. I don't mean to cut you. I process it, but I'm also, I believe strongly in God and faith, which years ago in all my prisons and everything, I didn't. I'm very faithful. I go to church almost every week if I can. Mm-hmm. I believe God has a plan, and I guess this is it. And I believe certain things happen for a reason. And for for your audience, I can tell you two things that happened. After my daughter died, I went to Las Vegas. And for the people that don't have faith, they can explain this to me. And there's several other things. But I went to Vegas. I was filming a movie. And I was really upset about my daughter. It was her first time when she died, her birthday. And I went out, called my sister. I went back in. She says, you know, your daughter's with you. And I sat at a bar to have breakfast because the restaurant was packed. And a young couple sat next to me. And the waiter asked her for identification, and I said, why? And I said, I didn't see you give anybody else. And she says, well, because you can have alcohol here. So I got off my seat and gave her my seat because the boyfriend took a seat, and I teased him that you didn't give her a seat. And she said my birthday is the exact day and of my daughter and year. Whoa. So what was the odds of that after I called my sister? But now this year, I was in Europe. I was in Albania, and I went to a cafe. I prayed on August 13th because her birthday's August 14th for a sign from her. I went into a cafe. I walked out of that cafe for some reason. I walked to another cafe. It was six blocks away. I was only there once at the time. I met a young girl there that was working. She was a nice kid, and she waited on me again. And she says, how are you? I says, good, how are you? And she went in and left. She came back. She was all dressed. And I says, well, you're all so dressed up. And she goes, oh, today's my birthday. So it was 2 years in a row, girls that were interacting with me. Their birthday was my daughter's birthday.
Signal.
Now, people could say that's astronomical odds, or is that God to tell me that your daughter's around? That faith?
Whatever works for you.
Yeah, for me, it's God.
Yeah,
it's just something made me go to that cafe and walk out of the other one.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, you know, when people question faith, I don't.
Yeah, I mean, what the chances of that would be one in a billion. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I mean, unbelievable.
And to interact with me. And sit next, me and you, we can go out today and go everywhere and ask somebody for the what's their birthday. And we ain't going to find everybody. It's my daughter's birthday where we go. We could try every day.
That gave me the chills in a way.
Me too.
Yeah, it happened 2 years in a row.
On her birthday. Wow. Wow.
Let me just acknowledge some more people that are watching. Okay. Mimi Dorshu says she loves your accent.
Thank you.
It's a good accent, you know? It's a good accent. Mark Willing is watching. Yasmin Santos is watching. Ambulia Cooper is watching. Mick Hanron is watching. Martina Mitchell, Pam Daly, Kathy Forselli, Christina Lachimia. I think these are all new people who are watching this show. Mark Willing says to you, I'm sorry about your daughter. This disease is so deadly. Well, I got to say, yeah, a disease is so deadly, but she was murdered. That's how I look at it anyway.
I love what Mike Brill says about that story you just told us. He says, I call them God's wink, you know?
Yeah. It's
God what?
God's wink.
God's wink. I that is something.
I see that.
It.
Yeah. Mike Burke says, I got here late. John who? That's good. And if you're just joining us, we are talking with John Alight. So how do people butcher your last name? Alighty.
Even I butchered my last name because my last name's Alita.
Alita.
Alita. Alita.
Oh, so I'm saying it wrong.
No, you're fine because when I grew up, everybody said A-Light because they couldn't pronounce it in school, so I gave up. And then I started saying A-Light. Everybody started saying A-Light. Even my family said it. And then it went to Elite because we just got rid of the vowel at the end.
Right.
So it made it easier. So I say it three different ways myself still. But the real pronunciation is Alita.
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 Yeah.
You got that?
I got it.
You
we
got
put
that.
Your names all the time on here.
Yeah,
by
we.
The way.
I mean, we got. I don't know where these people come from. a couple of emails that came in. Where are they? Oh man, I just had them.
Wow, he looks, you know, one of the things
save.
That you've told me before, which just blows my mind, is being in a Brazilian prison.
Yeah.
I mean, what was that like?
You know,
it was fabulous, Mark.
I mean, it does not sound, you know.
You know you're in jail when you're in Brazil prison, put it that way.
Yes.
It's not really a jail. Honestly, it's a concentration camp. And, you know, George Anastasia was the writer of one of my books, Gotti's Rules, and he did a great job with it. He did a lot of research, and there wasn't one advocate group allowed into that prison. It was that bad. Dangerous conditions were horrific. And, you know, you realize you made the wrong choices in life when you end up there. And there was all kinds of murders there. There was all kinds of diseases. You couldn't breathe. We were sub below. If you read some of the stories, prior to me getting there, there was floods that everybody that was sub below in our cells drowned. There was there was cocktails thrown at inmates from guards. There was guards raping inmates. It was, you know, it was just another level of prison that you can't imagine. And I was very violent there. I stay friends with a lot of the guys from Italy that was with me, Denmark. Me and him are best friends, and we did a four-part series about his life in Denmark and Sweden. That was a number one series. So guys from the UK, very good friends with Justin and O, and hello to you guys, all of you. A lot of respects from Spain, from Turkey. Nareo, another friend of mine, almost died there from Italy. He's in Spain now, so we all stay tight. These guys did a lot of interviews about what I did in those jails.
We're going to take another break, and we'll be back. Yeah.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
When you look into the mirror, do you see your addiction to drugs or alcohol staring back at you? At Gaudenzia, in that mirror, we see you, healthy and at peace. At Gaudenzia, we see the tools you can use to recover the life you want to live. Hope is in the effective treatment we can offer, designed uniquely for you. Your hope is waiting at Gaudenzia. Call 833-976-4357. 833-976-4357. Through Gaudenzia, you can recover your life. Begin today.
This is Elvin Bishop, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Welcome back. Welcome to join Clean and Sober Radio out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We're having a second time. We have John Alete. I'm trying now. I'm really screwing.
Don't
up.
Worry about it.
All right. On the show, and the most amazing story. I think John's story, Mark, is absolutely way more amazing than our bank robber friend. But still, I mean, still both good stories. But I think John is.
He takes the cake.
He
for
takes
sure.
The cake. And the amazing thing is, he didn't stay in that and die in that.
And he's helping addicts all the time on the front lines.
On the front line.
I mean, that's just such an amazing thing.
It's weird how your brain can reattach itself correctly or switch off or switch on. To be able to make a transformation like John has made.
So, and you know, for people listening, it's like with recovery, like it's the hardest work ever to make a change like that. I'm a therapist, and to actually be able to change, and it's like us with stopping and everything. It's not easy, you know. It takes everyday work.
It does, you know.
Yes, I don't know.
I mean,
hopefully at some point you'll learn to change that one.
Well, you'll have to talk to Brad about
that. Oh, this is a sore subject.
You know, you'll have to. Jose M. from Bronx, New York. I've been struggling with addiction my whole life, and now I am clean and sober for 11 months. Thanks for the show.
Amazing.
That's good. That's good stuff.
It's great stuff.
That's the thing, like John. The giving back in so many different ways you don't even know you're giving back. I mean, somebody can be listening to this show right now and is doing a lot of bad stuff, and maybe he hears one thing that John said, and maybe he says, maybe I don't want to live like this anymore.
Transformation, you know, and if anybody's listening to this show, there is, you can change, right? If anybody's struggling with addiction or criminal behavior or whatever, I mean, it's just a testament to it.
What does this mean? Great show. This is Mark Willing.
Mm-hmm.
Gary will never sleep with the fishes. He won't go near the water.
It's a little random.
It's the mob.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, okay.
I knew that. Yeah. You ever drowned anybody? You ever put anybody in the ocean?
Yeah. We did a lot of it. Yeah.
Would they be like, please don't do this? Or would you?
You know, in that life, doesn't matter what any of us beg, including myself. You know, when something's supposed to happen to you, I mean, guys batted the hell out of me and hit me with a car, and, you know, it's just part of it. I didn't beg. I mean, I didn't beg because I know better. You know, it's not, you know, maybe some guys, you got to remember, I'm going to, and this isn't political.
Yeah.
When the guy shot Trump and he got shot in the ear, some guys are going to cower. They don't know themselves what they're going to do. And some guys are going to get up immediately and fight back. He's just a fighter, so he got back and forth. Other guys are going to run. Other guys are going to, you know, you don't know what your reaction is until you get it.
I grew up
in this life. So, you know, this I was accustomed to. I told you off air.
Yeah.
You guys said, well, you're not afraid. Yeah, I'm afraid if you put me on heights. You know, so it's what you're accustomed to. I hate heights. I'm afraid of heights. I'm a chicken when it comes to heights. So when people say, well, he's not afraid of that, well, because I was accustomed to this. This was the life I grew up in. I'm used to fighting. I'm used to blood since I'm a little kid. Since I'm actually 3-4 years old, we're boxing. We're used to getting hurt. I wasn't intimidated by guns. I was shot. You know, actually, the guy that shot me, I told him to go F himself. I didn't think he was going to shoot me, but he shot me. So, you know, it just...
It's how your brain is wired.
Yeah,
we can't relate to that. I mean, I can't. You can't either.
A good friend of mine, Mikey Merlo, chased the guy
with
a shotgun. Chased him.
Yeah.
And the guy was scared and turned around and shot him out of fear and blew his head off when he was a young guy, 17 years
old. So if these, if in your old life, if these guys grabbed you and put you up on a roof somewhere, that would have been worse than getting shot, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or on a ladder.
That would have been.
On a ladder.
Yeah, don't give anybody ideas.
Yeah, that's not where you want to go. Yeah. Did you ever let anybody go? Like, were you ever like, gonna do it and then just kind of was like,
well, me and Bobby Borielli, he got killed too in front of his house in Brooklyn. John Gotti Sr. asked us to go to construction site. I've talked about this before. So we went up and we went in the outside elevator. It's pre-construction. Mm-hmm. And only the beams are up. So we went up to get the guy, and he was towards the edge and whatever floor it was, 20-something floor. And we told him, come here. And he goes, no, come over here.
Oh, no.
So we go, no, come here. And he wouldn't come over. He knew something was wrong. So we both went down the elevator. We go, we'll wait for him to come down. But he wouldn't come down that night. You know, we waited for hours. And both of us looked at each other and said, we're not going over there. So so we never got him. But, you know, we weren't supposed to kill him. We were just supposed to hurt him.
Were you the best man at Gotti's wedding, or he was the best man at your wedding?
No, he was the best man at mine.
John Gotti Jr. was the best man at your wedding.
At yours, I was in his sister's wedding party. Yeah. And I was at his wedding. There was only 300 people invited to his wedding at the Helmsley.
So, okay, we're actually coming to the hour. First of all, is there anything we didn't ask you that we should have asked you? And number two, any words of advice for any kids that are punks and think they're tough guys? And
it's not that they, you know, I got to speak up for the inner cities. A lot of these kids are just like me. They were nice kids growing up, and they're staying with the wrong guys because my friends were really bad. And then I was the good one. Later on, I become worse than everybody.
Yeah.
So a lot of these kids just in the wrong direction. They need the right people around them to teach them the right things and understand the difference of some of the things that are really punkish to things that are okay, even if you're going to break the law. I shouldn't say that I'm not advocating people break the law. But you shouldn't be robbing a woman's pocketbook. You shouldn't be going in a store and putting a gun to a store owner's head and taking his money. You shouldn't be going with seven guys to beat up one guy. If you want to fight, even though I'm against it, fight one-on-one. Don't be a coward. So, you know, these are some of the things I would advise the kids. If you're going to be in the street, at least do it with some dignity. And I'm not saying stay on the street. I'm going to tell you, if you're on the street, get off the street. There's so many ways you can make a good living.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And you are absolute proof of it. Hey, thanks for joining us again, John.
Yeah, thanks, John.
We really appreciate it.
Appreciate it, too.
Remember, if you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, help is available. I'm getting a signal that I got to stretch this for 2 minutes.
It's going to be a long
time. Well, I can tell you what you can tell them.
Yeah, I know to tell them.
No, you can tell them about my movie I'm doing, Pony. It's about fentanyl and race car driving. I'm sorry.
It's
about fentanyl, and that's why I took the part. I got the lead part in it, and it's a good message about kids, and the movie has meaning to me. So
is this going
to
be released at some point, John?
Yeah, we're starting filming. They already started filming. I start filming in November, my scenes. And also, you know, D. Gillen, Black Poster Project. I just was at St. Patrick's Cathedral in Manhattan, and she does a lot of good work for the memories of our kids and also advocating. She was on CNN with me, Dr. Genty Tuskezi, that was here on the show with me.
Yeah.
That's a neurosurgeon, is one of my best friends. So they do some real good work for kids, and Dee Gillen's really somebody that really helped me through this. Jimmy, your friend, my friend, Petrowski, yeah, lost his kid, yeah, and helped me through. So there's some real good people out there, and you know, people that want to know or need help can go on my Instagram, John Elite, and my name's my Instagram, DM me, and I work with a lot of kids.
Listen, thank you for your story and your message. Just thanks a lot. You're a great guy.
Thanks.
For Clean and Sober Radio, I'm Gary Hendler.
I'm Mark Sigmund.
Thanks for joining us, as usual, and thanks for all the support, and we'll see you later.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.